Hello, everyone, and welcome after a prolonged break back to the Real Housewives. What's up, across the world? And welcome back to the Housewives Archives, a podcast where we talk exclusively about all things Real Housewives. My name's Ellie Nunn, and sorry, I'm just distracted. He's turned up with a cowlick and a big red hood like a Mother Teresa. It's my co-host, James Evans!
Are you yawning, Ellie?
PK and I are living separate. Don't you dare,
Don't you
Andy.
Dare.
Hey, Lovebean.
Hey, Lovebean. I love the muscle memory there of your intro. It's like we never left. It's uncanny.
It's like riding a bike, James.
It really is.
If the bike careers off the road and smashes into a parked car.
Oh my goodness. Hiya.
Who are you?
Friend?
Again?
Sister? Soulmate? Oh, yeah. Ellie?
I want to say Ellie.
No? Ellie.
Yeah, Edward. I try and explain that Starbucks story to people all the time, and it's just not funny unless you were there. So I won't do
you
it now.
You had to be there. Also, they probably don't know me. They don't know my star power and my comedy stylings.
Why is that involved in that story? The Starbucks story is me being funny.
Yeah, but I was there. I'm a good audience member. What are you talking about? We're such a powerful duo wherever we go. Why are you fighting me on this?
Have I told you about how at Christmas I bought my dad a painting of somewhere that he used to visit when he was a child, and it made him really tearful. Yeah. And it was, I nailed it. It was a great gift. And the next day, he was telling other family members who'd arrived about the painting. And he got all choked up again. And he was looking at my boyfriend, Kim, and being like, I have to say, you know, I did have a look at it earlier and get choked up again. And I was like, I bought you the painting.
Sorry, can we just clarify?
And I said, I bought the painting, Dad. And he looked at me incredulous and he went, yes, but Kim lives closer to where it was. I was like,
Oh,
that's not how gifts work.
Oh, that's, yeah, okay. That's the rules now, isn't it?
You don't get credit if you live closer.
You're joking me.
To where the thing was made.
Oh my God, that's great. So I live in New York, so that must give me so much primacy for so many like culturally important things for so many people.
Totally. When you're not here, I thank you often for my gifts made abroad.
Right, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Thank you, James.
You're welcome. How have you been?
Good. I've been good. I've been real good.
Good.
Yeah, quite a lot of mad stuff. I've just been telling James I'm about to go on a very, very exciting, very long job. Made me sound like a spy.
Yeah. Come on. Very scant on the details here.
Can you imagine if I was a spy?
I have to change my name. Dye my hair. I'm going to Bosnia and Herzegovina. It's very hush-hush. Can't say any more than that.
I'm going into witness protection. It's very thrilling. But the pod will still be here. So, yes. So I'm currently just preparing my life for that. And James has just been off wowing the Floridians.
Yes.
With his Belfast brilliance.
Sarasota has been talking nonstop about my one-person show that I
That's
did down
for
there.
James.
Thanks, everyone. I feel like, joking apart, I haven't seen you for months. I've been ears deep into this production. I feel like I was on a Sonia retreat.
You haven't seen me since you saw me in New York, right?
Yeah. No, like seen you virtually.
Did we do an episode after when I got back?
No, we did. No, our last episode was Christmas.
No, we did.
I haven't seen you since Christmas. No, we did. We did that episode. Not the Dorinda episode.
What was our last episode about?
Dorinda.
Yeah.
Dorinda.
I just saw a thing on Twitter of Dorinda being like, I don't think people in Haiti are going to college. I forgot that I was saying that.
She said it with so much disdain.
No.
Send her over there quick. She'll sort out that situation. Have you seen... so let's have like a little like check-in about all the Bravo news and everything. I'm assuming you don't know about this, but Bravo's under a lot of legal trouble right now.
What? Oh, because of the
It's getting
drugs
sued
thing.
Left, right, and center because of the... Oh, you have heard of the drugs thing.
Yes, I am on Twitter. That is the closest I've got. But I only ever hear about it from sources that I don't follow, like the niche good sources. It's always, it's like being told by someone who you're like, don't talk to me about Real Housewives. It's like very basic. But yes, I have seen about it.
Anything that has the word tea in the name, I kind of like glaze over a bit. If anything's in the form of spilling the tea, then I don't want to know. But yes, so for those who don't know, disgruntled former housewife Leah McSweeney is suing Bravo and Andy Cohen. And one of the allegations is that Andy does coke and shares his cocaine with his favorite housewives and gives them preferential treatment. And the reason why I brought this up is that loads of current and also former housewives have come to his defense. And one of them was Dorinda. And it was kind of like, I don't think you really want Dorinda as your star witness to on whether or not Andy Cohen does cocaine to like talk in his defense. I think you might want to simmer down over there.
But also, is anyone shocked by that? I'm like, I'd be kind of shocked if he wasn't doing coke. Like, no.
I guess, like, of course he does. Also, it doesn't make sense to me. It seems like a bit of an oxymoron, because the other part of her lawsuit is that she was newly sober and felt pressured into drinking to be on the show and fell off the wagon. So you can't then argue that you were pressured into dabbling in substances for entertainment's purposes, and then also alleging that your boss gives preferential treatment and shares drugs with his favorite housewives, of which you're not one of them. So surely, if anything, he's like doing her a favor by not sharing his drugs with her.
It's very strange load of allegations in terms of
this very litigious time that we're in, and I do wonder if this is going to be the downfall of Bravo as we know
it. I think so.
I don't know if we're ever going to see, you know, the ultimate girls trip in Morocco. I don't know if that's ever going to see the light of day again.
I'd be very sad.
It breaks my heart that we have footage of Alex McCord and Vicky Gumbelson on a camel somewhere in the desert, and we're potentially never going to see it because Brandy Glanville.
Story of our lives.
Which I think, I don't know if you've read much about that as well, which obviously, you know, like, I believe women. And from what I've read about the situation, it does sound really awful, but I kind of get what Brandy's saying. And I think it sort of taps into discussions that we've had before about this show, where she's probably saying, look, I haven't been a full-time housewife for almost 10 years now. You invite me to come back to a show and I get up to the same shenanigans that I was always doing back in the day, and it was no problem. And now all of a sudden I've been fired from the production and I'm being sued. So there has to be some sort of safeguarding here for me as well as for Carol.
Yeah. I think it's in total flux, isn't it? Because it's just, the shows don't really know what to do anymore.
We are in a new age.
We are in a new age. Mm. And I don't think that the shows as we know them can probably exist in that new age. I think Beverly Hills is doing quite an impressive job of like still chugging along, maintaining some consistency, considering when you look at the new New York and how sort of sterile it was. But then Beverly Hills has always been a bit sterile.
I was going to say, yeah, it's easy when your neutral is pretty dull and slow as it is, you know. Yeah. The fall is never going to be that great. But let's discuss that today on our special comeback episode, where we're delving into this most recent season of Beverly Hills.
BH, old Benson and Hedges. What did you think of this most recent season?
I think we're sort of back to the Beverly Hills that we're accustomed to, aren't we? After two pretty good seasons of high octane Erica's life falling apart drama, I think we're back to how we know Beverly Hills, which is normally a pretty promising start where there's a few things cooking. And then they, in the second half, sort of narrow in on one specific topic and harp on about it until the end of time and don't drop it, rather than keeping all of those balls in the air. They're not very good at multitasking.
Also, just a lot of really annoying hospital visits. I don't know. Hospital visits. Like, what's this thing of everyone's blood pressure going up and the show having like a total meltdown over it?
Yeah, you're the most laid back Real Housewives franchise. You ladies don't have an excuse to have high blood pressure.
No. And it's all very kind of, I don't know. I wanted one of them to be like, is that big a deal? But they all were acting both times like Crystal and Sutton were going to die. You know, Garcelle starts like crying about going to hospital with Sutton, being like, she's scared. I'm scared.
we're all scared or whatever. It's
they're all saying that like Bravo don't look after their cast members. If I was a producer and then Sutton had a bit of a turn, felt a bit lightheaded, but was ultimately fine, they sent her to the hospital just to be sure. And then Garcelle's like, can I go too? If I was a producer, I would have been like, no, get your bum back on that sofa. We need you. We've got a show to film. I'm not losing two of our talent in one go.
You'd be so old school.
I would.
Puffing on your cigar. Get your butt back on that sofa.
On my Benson and Hedges.
Exactly. I'll fire your ass.
Here, have some of my cocaine and then get back out on set.
Yes, exactly. And it was a bit the same with the whole Anna Marie thing of it felt convenient after their argument for there to be this slight martyr act. But I'm like, what Anna Marie did was just like sit with her and like take her pulse in the nicest way possible.
Yeah.
Like, I could do that.
That's the thing. Right. But like karmically
and kind of freak her
kind
out.
Of funny that both time the two people who've picked a fight with Anna Marie are both the two people who've been stricken, you know, Deus Ex Machina style.
I'm sorry, but if we were back in the days of Carlton and Joyce, someone would be throwing around accusations of being like, it just feels a little weird to me.
And there'd be some camp to it as well, you know, everyone.
Yes. Imagine Joyce when someone's having a panic attack, just endlessly fussing.
Guys, this is scary.
What else happened this season? I found season-wise, putting the reunion aside, because there's quite a lot in the reunion that I found quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the season was quite boring. I think for me, the standouts were that first scene of Carla and Mauricio was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We'd never seen their dynamic so different. And it was that fascinating thing of having that right at the beginning. And it felt quite different for Bravo because it wasn't the New Jersey thing of, or they did it with Beverly Hills as well, of like showing a scene from later and being like 6 months earlier. It was actually just this slight sort of double life of Kyle of like, it felt very real, which actually often things of Real Housewives can be lacking, that sense of uncomfortableness and just sitting in that and no kind of, you know, editors putting in music where it's like, bom, 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 to like fill the awkwardness. It just was raw and real. So I thought that was really fascinating. And I'm kind of with Kyle in terms of the women on the show really prodding that thing of being like, you're not being honest. When Kyle was like, I've effectively kind of prostituted my whole life for this show. I've like lost two sisters. I look fucking like outed my sister for alcoholism, live on TV or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you think about how long she and Mauricio have been together and the way their kids are involved. I kind of am with her that she didn't not have it on the show. It was still like a part of the through line, but like,
I think though, if you're going to make the argument, Sutton, you haven't contributed anything to the show or shown your life. I have. You don't want to start with, I showed my daughter's birthday. I took my daughters off to college. It's like that, if anything, is a losing argument. Like you've lost me there.
No. But if she'd said I outed my sister for alcoholism.
No, she did win me back with the Kim stuff. But I think the point is, and I don't think they made this point, but I guess my rebuttal would be if I was on that sofa, yes, but that's something, you outed your sister. I know that's still linked to you, but I think there's an argument to be made that you're in control and that you are the victim.
But I do understand what she's saying, that someone like Sutton has much clearer boundaries of like her kids aren't on the show, her relationship is alluded to, but isn't, where Kyle has set much more of an open door policy. And that now is very painful and difficult when you're working through it. And also I kind of get what Kyle's saying, that it's like Kyle's done it for the last 10 years or whatever. And Sutton's done it for like 2.
I think it's a tricky, sorry.
Go. No, that was it. Please interrupt. Go on.
You're wrong. I think it's an interesting, tricky, ethical boundary for sure. And I don't want to sound like, look, people can take parasocial relationships very seriously, and there's a very toxic side to that, as we've discussed on this show. However, Lord knows parasocial relationships have gotten me through some dark times in my life. I relied on parasocial relationships during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We've really invested in Kyle's life. And this is, again, one of those instances where Real Housewives can be long-term storytelling at its finest. And it is slightly, it's giving me blue balls a bit that Kyle is being so coy, especially when I think the answer is very obvious and it is between the subtext. There's clearly, I think there's something going on between her and Morgan, but she just isn't saying it outright. Mm. However, I've seen a lot of discourse online where people sort of viscerally hate Kyle or the Fox Force 5 and are reveling in this downfall of her marriage as some sort of karmic retribution, which I think is odd. But I do also think... You know, like if you're on a reality show and you've gotten this fame and prestige from it, like you kind of do have to prostitute yourself. And we're not demanding to see her kids' medical records or something like that, but it's like, don't be cute about it. You knew this was going to be a big topic of conversation. You got to deliver somewhat.
I agree. I think that I think it must be really difficult when you've set boundaries at certain postmarks and then you want to change them and you can't take them back. And it's clear that whatever's going on with Morgan or in her marriage and with her life, she now wants to change where those boundaries are and reinvent herself a bit as a person. And it must be very difficult to reinvent yourself when you're famous at a certain level. I think you're right in terms of staying on the show, that there is a slight kind of blue-balling thing that if you're going to stay on the show and if you're going to say, I still want to be a part of that narrative and that reality experience. And to be honest, I really wouldn't be surprised if Kyle left the show, because I think she does clearly want to reinvent herself a bit. But maybe she needs the show too much to do that. And that's putting her in this weird halfway house where she's trying to now put boundaries in that weren't there in the first place.
This also wouldn't be an issue if she had a stronger cast to deal with, because I kind of get Kyle's argument. I don't think she necessarily made this argument, but why should she be the one to proffer this information? Sure, better housewives may do that.
It's a bit like, you guys be interested. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You need to tug on the thread and you need to hold my feet to the fire a bit more. And I think that's what I found frustrating, is that this was one of several storylines that I felt was getting some momentum, sort of peaked at that CBD dinner and then didn't really go anywhere, because Sutton and Garcelle, that whole couch, they all sort of speak out of the side of their mouths and they sort of imply a lot.
They're
confessional warriors, but they won't come out in the diegetic scenes and outright say, Kyle, are you a lesbian now? Or whatever.
You know, that they want to say
that's bombastic.
That's such a good point, the whole sort of side of the mouth thing. Apart from Sutton, who kind of does it, but in a way that ends up making Sutton so annoying. You know, it works on the show, but she really was driving me mad. But yeah, I think... it also doesn't help that there weren't interesting enough side stories going on. Like, I don't care, awful as it is, about PK finding Dorit's PTSD frustrating. Or, like, I care about the breakdown of Dorit and Kyle's friendship. I found that very interesting on the reunion. But otherwise, I'm like, Dorit, why are you here? I did care about the Garcelle-Dorit thing, and I thought that was one of the most fascinating things in the series. And I still think it's interesting that the show, I think, can't decide where it comes down on that argument. Because the show is definitely the conversation itself between Dorit and Garcelle when they sat down, I would argue that the show was kind of falling on Dorit's side, because they so easily could have played a whole kind of montage of clips of Dorit fucking up in a way that actually, when she said about, we all use the word attacking, they did show a load of clips saying that. And
yeah,
I think we've said this before. I think it was, what's that thing where it's like right note, wrong time? Like, I think Garcelle's right, but it wasn't the right example to use that occasion. I think there've been plenty of times where Garcelle could have called Dorit out for saying very thoughtless things. And I think she picked a time where actually Dorit was using a vocabulary that they do all use often. And Garcelle is kind of coming for her constantly. So she wasn't mistaken. And it's always frustrating when someone uses the wrong example for something where it's not saying that how they feel isn't valid, but there would have been much stronger times to like pick that battle with Dorit.
Yeah, I wonder if it was just a thing where she sort of reached her limit and that was the straw that broke the camel's back, even though it wasn't necessarily the strongest example. But I think Dorit is quite scattergun with her microaggressions. I don't think she's necessarily aware of it, but I think that scene was actually a really strong... I've never seen a scene like that within these shows that is a very clear, concise crystallization of the bigger, broader argument that we often have critically out in these spaces outside the show of, if you diversify casts on these shows, you need to then think about the repercussions of that and the optics of... I don't think anyone likes a situation where one housewife organically is sort of rendered off limits for standard housewives shenanigans. And that's kind of where Garcelle has found herself. And I think no one has a very clear-cut path forward for how they sort of navigate that. And as we've said before, on a show that is built off of the back of women having no filter and putting their foot in their mouth and giving in to their instincts all the time for saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, how do you do that whilst very consistently, reliably checking in on the power of language and the ramifications of that? And we saw that happen in Euroni, and it was kind of fucking boring.
Yeah.
I also think it's odd because, again, I've seen a lot of discourse online, and it felt like this with Ebony. Why are you laughing at me?
Because that must have been like a Dorit style monologue, because in the time you were talking, you froze for ages. I went offline, I changed my Wi-Fi thing. I came back thinking, I then couldn't get you back online. And when you finally did, you were just still talking. I don't think you even noticed I was gone. I look forward to hearing what you said on the pod.
Really? Right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What if I said something wildly racist and we just have you being like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree.
Sure.
In one end, out of the other.
What were you going to say about Ebony?
I think there's a way, I remember this discourse when Garcelle joined, it's the same, when Garcelle joined the show and when Ebony joined the show, I remember there was a lot of excitement from some factions of, finally, we have someone who can put a spotlight on this racist behavior of the Fox Force 5 or like Ramona and Luann. And it always struck me as slightly odd because it's like, why are you willing a black housewife to basically be the victim of racism and then put her in that position where she's then having to put up? It just seems like such an odd thing to like will into existence.
Yeah.
And it seems like an odd thing to will, not just for that individual housewife, but also for the show. So it's like you want the show to go off the rails and you want it to be completely upended with these really big, weighty existential questions that we're all grappling with. Sorry, that was a big Dorit tangent, but I think going back to the show, I've never seen, so it was nice to see on the show have these two individuals, and it was all sort of crystallized, a sit down between two people where they're arguing their case, where I completely see both sides. One thing, and I do agree with the edit there, but I thought it was odd when, and I saw her get mocked for it a lot online, when Dorit was like, I'm Jewish, Garcelle. And then it kind of had the funny Alex McCord music where, I don't know, it just felt like an odd little flourish to make.
It's weird because she's not wrong, but also it's like they have to handle that pretty carefully since that is quite a large discourse at the moment between the crossovers in sort of racism versus colorism with the Jewish community. And it's like a highly sensitive topic, and it did feel odd that that was used just to be a bit like, wah, 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 like,
right.
Dorit grasping at straws. But it's like, it'd be one thing if Dorit had been like, I'm blonde.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's so funny. Dorit can't seem to decide, I think, on the show whether to send herself up or not. And I wish she would either own. She's not like Sutton, where she's buying into her own high maintenance. She sort of tries to play the Kyle everyman thing, but then shows up wearing a full red. Sort of something from Dune, where I'm like, I'm so confused with Dorit because I suppose Sutton's sort of taken the space of the person who owns their weird, highly strung face massaging things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have someone like Kyle or Garcelle who are kind of relatively low-key, and Dorit sort of somewhere in the middle where she's not quite a caricature, but she sort of is.
Yeah, I think she's slowly developing into a 30 Rock character, which is great and hilarious, but it is that then does mean it, there's this cognitive dissonance where suddenly she's like plucked from this place beyond time or space where she's then suddenly very much in 2024 issues and has to articulate,
yeah,
you know, the concept of microaggressions and stuff and make her answer for it. And there can be a lot of comedic potential there were it not for the fact that it's a very,
yeah, exactly,
like, emotionally weighty topic, you know. Speaking of her attire, I love the idea that someone who's going into reunion, knowing that she's going to have her feet held to the fire for a lot of microaggressions, that and the child bride comment, decides to wear that getup, where it's like, there's nothing like overtly problematic about her attire, but there's also just something you can't quite put your finger on, where you're like, Maybe just play it safe and wear like a little black dress or something. You know, just, what is all this?
Yeah.
Hard to read.
Exactly.
God love her.
The child bride thing was interesting. I think Crystal's place on the show is really unusual at the moment because I'm not really sure what Crystal provides. Even with her fight with Anna Marie, she sort of tried her hand at doing the housewife thing and going for drama and going very like head on and trying to kind of show her personal show, but then it didn't develop or go anywhere. Like I wanted more from, you think back to those seasons of Real Housewives of New York with someone like Kristen and that whole trip to, is it the Berkshires with the canoe and the...
Yeah, that crap trip to the Berkshires. Yeah, I think it was the Berkshires. Yeah.
And there's like a huge argument at night between Heather and Kristen and things like that. And it's like they develop and it keeps going. And with Crystal and Anna Marie, it was sort of just like one blowout at a gala event over something that didn't really make much sense anyway. And then
the stamina.
Well, that's it. And then Anna Marie dropped that whole thing of being like, you said you thought the women were shallow and uneducated or whatever, which Crystal did say. And then no one really bit. It just sort of was like, oh.
Crystal kind of frustrates me because I like her more than I should. And I don't know why, but I think I would be sad if she didn't come back. But I also acknowledge that she's objectively done very little.
But just like get better storylines. Like, who cares about your brother? The storyline with the brother and the girlfriend who we never even met, we could not care less about. I honestly think I'd rather watch the New Jersey husbands than that storyline.
I think in recent years, we've kind of been spoiled by individual storylines. And I think we maybe wistfully romanticize in the past that every housewife had a solo storyline as exciting as Danielle Staub's. Where if we remember, like, Caroline Manzo's never had an exciting solo storyline. Like, they can't all be winners, and I accept that.
Yeah.
I think Crystal had a perfectly serviceable storyline. However, I think that the producers have a lot to answer for, and I think they're a bit lazy, where it's like, get a bit exploitational here. Fly in his ex-fiance,
right,
like,
yeah,
force her
that
to have a sit-down. You know, come on, like, you've got to pick up the slack.
Everything's very reflective rather than present. It wasn't like a present situational problem. It was like, I've been doing a lot of thinking back on this thing that happened 2 years ago, and I want to talk to you about it. And it's like,
right,
we don't
it's kind
care.
Of done and
exactly.
dusted. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was more that.
I love Crystal getting first seat at the reunion, sort of by default, when Sutton died, and then Garcelle had to take her to the morgue, and then like Crystal was like, yay, I get first seat. But even then, it took her like 20 minutes to realize. It was like, no, budge up. Come on, Crystal, this is your time. It's never going to happen again.
Exactly.
That was your chance. Woo!
What did you think of Anna Marie as a new housewife?
I find it so funny that we had a housewife like Diana last year, who was so clearly destined to be a one and done. And you don't think it could get any worse. And then suddenly the producers outdo themselves and then they find Anna Marie. Diana was a dud, but at least she had this like cartoonishly weird presence to her and some sort of charisma. Whereas Anna Marie is just annoying.
Exactly. Diana had that amazing like, oh, you want to find your real one? sort of delivery. And she had the like young boyfriend singing that was really funny and things like that.
And she had these like tawdry rumors around her that she was some like Jeffrey Epstein madam or something. It was like, there's a lot of soap opera villainy going on here. Whereas Anna Marie was just sort of like, that's actually not the case. And actually I said that I was blah, 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 and the esophagus and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, shut up. God.
But also her whole thing about her husband saying that, like, what I like about you is you're basically saying you're like fine, but not great in any area, or you're like an 8.5, like you're not, or whatever, where you kind of go, yeah, that's about it. There was no area on this. You didn't excel in fashion, you didn't excel in delivery, you didn't excel in storyline.
Yeah,
it was just like, meh.
I'm just so confused at the thought process of introducing a woman halfway through proceedings. She immediately goes on holiday to Hawaii and skips out half the events, and then when she is there, all she does is talk about Sutton's esophagus. Like, she's so clearly destined to be a mercenary friend of, and then they make her a main cast member. Like,
totally.
They're setting her up for failure. It's such a weird hill to die on, this whole esophagus thing. And this is, of course, knowing me the way you do, this is where I love her, is that the fact that she kept bringing it up and it would go down like a lead balloon every time. And then she thought it would be a good idea to bring it up again at a memorial service.
Literally. And also she just didn't seem to be anyone's friend. Like someone, I think Kyle had to obligatorily at the beginning kind of go like, my friend Anna Marie is joining on the show, whatever, but she didn't seem to have anyone to hang out with who wanted to hang out with her. It was just people listening being like,
she came on really strong that first dinner. That was like big Dana Wilkie first audition energy of like,
hey guys, what's going on? I'm a hugger. Yeah, why are you like going in on her so much? Like it's her marriage. Just like leave her alone. Wait, what's everybody talking about?
Shut up.
So then we also had Erica's sort of image, well, not image redo, but sort of personality do-over, which was really interesting. It was interestingly strategic. I think it's interesting the way that she's got her career kind of back in some ways through novelty, the kind of novelty of her and the novelty of her singing Expensive to Be Me, having just gone through that last few years, and the campness of something like Vegas. But without her sort of daggered poison, like, shut up, I don't like that, you don't talk to me like that, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
I will fucking kill you if you talk to me like that, so don't you ever talk to me like that, whatever. It was like, what's the point of Erica? Suddenly she was just like quite rational, sort of the voice of understanding of going, well, hang on, I know Kyle and I don't know where. It's like, what? And they had to kind of keep just like carting Denise out drunk to kind of try and prod Erica into saying something.
Oh my God. Wait, we need to talk about Denise in a second. Just so, but yes, just to finish Erica, she really is two extremes where sometimes she's really emotionally intelligent and caring and self-aware and very self-deprecating. Like, I completely see that out of all these women, Erica would be the one that Kyle would go to talk about her marriage issues.
Yeah.
And Erica dealt with it perfectly. And then she'll be so emotionally obtuse sometimes to the point where you're like, surely you're willfully being ignorant right now. Like making that announcement about the earrings apropos of nothing and then doing this long drawn out campy monologue at the ashes ceremony where she's like, no one's apologized to me and I'm very hurt about that and I'm letting that go. And it's just, and again, at the reunion, like Andy asking her some straight up questions about meeting the victims and how was that? And questions that are so clearly engineered that are softball, the answers are so obvious. And she would give the most robotic, strange, emotionally stunted answers. It's just extraordinary. She really swings from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, it's very strange. Yeah.
It's really something. I've never quite seen anything like it. But I completely see, like, still, like, if I had to hide a dead body, I think I might actually call Erica out of everyone.
Oh, yeah.
She'd do it. She'd know people. She'd say the right thing. I really believe, I can imagine her, like, putting her hand on my shoulder and, like, engaging with me and sort of calming me down. And
being like, you came to the right person.
Yeah, yeah. You came to the right place. We got this. And I was like, yeah.
We do got this.
We got But Denise, woo!
Denise, who that season when all that shit went down, I was so on Denise's side. And now I'm like, what is going on?
I know. She's never been a better housewife.
Like, wait, like, you were fine. But also, like, you left and most people were on your side. Why would you come back completely undermine your point? And exactly, now be a great housewife. Where, like, where's the bravo, bravo, bravo thing now?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so weird. I don't know why she's come back.
Such a glutton for punishment. And it's such, I've never seen such a clear-cut fight, especially on Beverly Hills, where they're not really scrappers, where it's like, Erica, stop, she's already dead. This is so not a fair fight. You are punching below your weight right now.
It was just amazing. We're also like, why, it's so weird. She was coming back in the same sort of way as a supporting person who has been really involved in drama might come back to try and be a part of the drama again. But what's weird is that her whole point on her seasons was not wanting to be a part of the drama and sort of removing herself and refusing to film. So I just don't understand what the benefit is to come back and to come back completely off your head.
I think Denise has been a victim again of Twitter gaze, hyping her up, convincing her that she's been yassified and that she can come in, she's Denise fucking Richards, and she can, like,
yes, she is.
Read the Fox Force 5 for filth. And she probably went in, had 16 tequilas, had some Dutch courage, and then in her mind, she's got all these Twitter gays cheering her on, and then she sees the footage afterwards, and is like, holy fucking shit.
Oh my
and then
God.
She has Dorit being like, your jacket's upside down.
Don't do that shit. But is it upside down?
Watch the show. Watch the show.
So then Sutton. Sutton, I mean, Sutton in many ways provided the highlights for the season with, like, name him. And the Magic Mike walkout and also the viciousness of her having lost Kathy. Do you want to lose another? Like, she, and then at, like, the kind of high camp as well. I do not care. I know this is awful. I don't care about Merce. I don't know why we were asked to invest so much in this ashes spreading. And also the amount Sutton cries about situations that we've not been a part of. So it's like, it just feels, I don't know. It just...
I liked it.
Oh, no!
Well, I like it, again, in a low-key storyline way. I think what I appreciated about the Mercer's Ashes storyline is that it highlights that Sutton's obviously an erratic weirdo. But on paper, at least, Sutton, I think, is one of the cooler housewives in terms of origin story. She has this very European, like, Bildungsroman story of how she came to be as this sort of protege ingenue under the tutelage of this renowned dance teacher. She's a very literary character, which of course I'm always drawn to. And I think she pops especially on Beverly Hills, where everyone else on the cast is either some variation of former actress or Hollywood grifter. She has this slightly ethereal quality to her. I tell you what she reminds me of. I've been watching a lot of The Twilight Zone before I go to bed. Mm-hmm. Basically, any character on The Twilight Zone is always some variation of a ghost, a robot, a possessed China doll, or a mortal who's been driven to madness. And somehow Sutton is reliably all four of those at any given time. She's like perpetually in a state of Twilight Zone, which of course I love. And I think it means that she hasn't quite...
Should I watch The Twilight Zone?
Yeah, I think you'd like it. It's very... There's like those old school shows, there's about 40 episodes a season, and inevitably with an anthology show, it's very hit and miss, but I could give you a list of some good ones.
Are they individual episodes?
Yeah, there's five seasons. Of the four, the episodes are only half an hour. The fourth season, they're an hour long, but that you can skip the fourth season. But they're good. You can just like watch a half hour episode before bed. They're great.
I'm looking for something to do that. Text me later.
Yeah.
Continue.
Tell me how you go. All right, okay. I do think that Sutton is pathologically overrated by the fandom.
Yes.
But I do applaud her for not going the way of similarly overrated housewives, of just sort of sitting back and coasting and doing like one shady bit of prop work in a confessional a season and becoming a meme. She's consistently been at her worst behavior since like the Lake Tahoe trip way back when. And I love how she's realized how annoying she is and weaponized it, a la the Naiman scene. I don't know if they realize it, but Sutton and Kyle are a very funny comedic duo. Like that Naiman scene like had me howling with laughter. And I think genuinely because it takes two to tango, like Kyle was the best scene partner and played into it perfectly.
Yeah.
It was an incredible scene.
No notes.
One thing I want to say, and not in like a kind of look shaming kind of way, and I did always know this, but when they brought it up at the reunion that Sutton was 49 years old, that blew my mind.
Yeah.
Like if you said she was 59, that I would have believed. No?
Yeah, no, I agree.
She's like the same age as Erica. I don't know.
It's weird. She has a very, she has a strange quality in that sense.
She has a very avian boned, sickly, very Victorian quality.
Yes.
Which I love. Of course.
Which I love.
I feel like I need to go back to Kyle because I feel like we didn't really dig in enough on this.
Well, I assumed we'd go back to Kyle talking about Kathy as well. So let's do that.
Well, do you...
No.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I just have to say, with the Morgan stuff, and I don't care how this sounds, I think it's weird. I think it's weird. I think it's weird. She has to be in a relationship with Morgan because it just doesn't compute for me that she would be friends with Morgan otherwise. That just doesn't... That seems weirder to me that she would have a platonic friendship out of the blue that's so intense with someone and start dressing alike.
Oh, I buy that because I've had those and like...
Really?
I would totally buy it if whenever Kyle was asked about it, she was just like, no, we're not in a relationship. We're just really good friends. But her response when she's asked about whether she's in a relationship is what I find weird. If I was asked...
Yeah, she's so coy about it.
Because I've had friendships like that. But if someone asked me if we were like lovers, I'd be like, oh, I wish, but no. I don't find the friendship weird, but the drama around it and her responses. Because one of the things that I almost quite value about with this season, I find it really interesting, the Kyle Dorit friendship breakdown. It's like Carol Radsville and Tinsley, that thing of suddenly putting space of going, no, I'm not saying we're not friends. I'm just saying we're not like soulmate. We're not like best friends. We went on one trip. We're friendly. And the other person being like, I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
But with this, it's slightly different because it does feel like Kyle's outgrown Dorit or his chain, or he's like different. And Dorit hasn't changed, except her hair color. And I think Dorit really feels the loss of that. And I do think it's weird that Kyle's slightly trying to rewrite as if they didn't have the friendship that they clearly did have before.
Mm-hmm.
But I quite appreciate on these shows seeing how transient those friendships can be, because I think on a wider level, it is important that we see more in shows like these and narratives and things like that, friendships changing in a way that doesn't have to have been from like a big fallout.
Yeah.
It can be that you were just like in a different space. And I actually find that quite, and that's why I find it very believable, Kyle and Morgan's friendship coming about and this kind of slight personality changes. I think we all know people who've made a new friend and become like a bit obsessed with them and slightly turned into them.
Couple of points here. Just going off of the thing you're saying about Dorit's friendship with Kyle, I also found it, because it's just been on my mind because they brought out Kevin Lee in the season finale, and of course Kyle did a little impression of LVP.
Mm.
And it got me thinking about their friendship. And I find it so interesting that both Lisa and Kyle still make these little pot shots at each other on their respective shows and in the press. And
Because it was such a real friendship.
But it's interesting in the sense that it's so distinct to how the show normally treats friendships and friendship breakups, where the shows are normally so committed to engineering friendship breakups for drama's sake, but then also they're so dedicated to tying up the loose ends and finding some sort of resolution at the end of every reunion.
Yeah.
And it feels very poignant in this instance because, of course, Lisa Vanderpump wouldn't be caught dead back on the show again with this cast. So the fight will never be reconciled in a way that the show would like. And it means that it never goes away. It has this very ghostly quality that haunts them both.
It's just like a weird toxic breakup. Totally.
It feels the most authentic representation of a friendship breakup that I've ever seen on these shows, where it's, you know, it does just sort of peter out and there's no resolution.
100 I completely agree. Yeah.
This is one of these instances where I do think Kyle's gender is actually shielding her more than if she were a man. I think if this was the other way around and the cameras were following Mauricio as if he was a main cast member and we saw him going to the gym and getting ripped and not drinking anymore, hanging out with someone a lot younger than him, we'd all be like, he's having a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
And or he's having an affair. And I think that would just be a given.
Mm.
And for some reason, I feel like the women are sort of tiptoeing around that a bit. And I don't mean that even in a pejorative sense. I think Kyle is kind of, she's gotten to the middle of her life and she's having a kind of crisis of identity and doesn't know who she is. And everything's been upended. And I think she's really recalibrating that. And I think that sort of just is a given.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about the scene really briefly of her with the therapist talking about her friend who committed suicide?
Yeah.
I wish we had that scene earlier on in the season, because that then clarified a lot for me and it made so much more sense.
It did, but I guess that's why they held it off, because it was a real like clarification moment where if they'd had that earlier, I guess it would have taken away from the drama of the uncertainty of...
Yeah.
But it makes so much sense. And again, it was just incredibly, and you know, again, it's why I'm kind of on Kyle's side about like, she really is sharing a lot on the show in terms of showing things that have happened and the kind of what she's dealing with and why potentially these changes are happening without explicitly like sort of harvesting her marriage breakup for drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I found that scene incredibly moving and incredibly insightful and authentic and just really devastating.
I think she really articulated something really interesting for me about friendships, where I think we all assume, I think Kyle's been cast over the years as a very stable figure just by comparison to her sisters and some of the wackier characters on these shows. She's always sort of been that voice of reason, that constant Greek chorus. And then obviously to have something like this happen and it completely upends your life. But then when she's saying like, this is the woman who, she was going to be the guardian of her kids if something happened to her and Mo. And this is the woman who, you know, would have been in control of her finances and everything. Like, I think we all have that one stable person who you think is more stable than you. And when you've lost that, it's such a double upending.
And also just someone so away from the show and away from how much of her life has been, not just with the show, but with her mom and her sisters, has been around performance and acting and Hollywood and this weird, just a lot of unusual heightened stuff, and you have this incredibly stable, real person who's just a complete rock. And I guess if you lose that and you never expect that to not be there, that kind of touchstone of reality.
And you lose that idea of them as well. Again, not to like sound whatever, but this idea that you assumed that they were stable and that they had it together, and obviously they were, you know, masking this deep sadness that you didn't even, you were a stranger to. It's just like a double shock. So yeah, anyway, let's talk about Kathy.
Well, I think that leads quite well to the Kathy thing, because I just, what the hell was going on with Kathy being trawled out at that reunion? Like some weird mafia boss.
I know.
Where I don't have any idea why they're suddenly okay together. It felt like it totally undermined Kyle's rawness and authenticity during the season about those things to suddenly be like, me and Kathy are fine, it's all good. And Kathy's just sat there kind of going, well, you know, I think for the last 3 years there's been a problem, whatever, and Kyle having to kind of go, no, or Kathy kind of speaking for her weirdly, and basically everyone on the couch is saying Kathy will like get you cancelled. And she's like, that's just, she got out the tissue and was like, that's just hilarious.
I know, yeah.
Just like dabbing her eyes. And you're like, what is going on?
Such a cold, calculating psychopath. I love it.
So weird.
I love that she just like, as soon as she emerged on set, it was just like too much for Sutton to handle. And she like went into anaphylactic shock. And then while it's all going on, everyone's like, genuinely, is Sutton going to die right now? And then the only one who doesn't seem to care is Kathy being like, well, she's 49. It's going to have to happen sometime.
Kathy's there being like, so what have you been up to? And Erica, yeah, I've been good, I've been good.
Oh, I love the holidays. I love presents.
It just felt really...
I took the decorations down.
Really strange to me, the way that that... And the way it was made, this whole like, bum, 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 bum. And it's like, we see her without the makeup, but when she was in the chair having the makeup done, kind of doing kind of like, well, I've known the whole time about Kyle and Rose. Kind of, I was like, this is so strange. Yeah.
It's one of the, I'm trying to think of another example now. And I think it's happened before where it's like, well, this is too late now. I enjoyed Kathy and I kind of would enjoy her back on the show. But like, the moment's gone now.
Exactly. Kathy was enjoyable for things like Who's Hunky Dory and her complete lack of awareness and all the toothless homeless stuff. And then like what was great was this sudden kind of dark energy that Kathy wouldn't own. Whereas what felt weird about this was it felt like Kathy was almost owning her villain status. And that felt really strange.
It also felt like a weird repudiation of this storyline that we've been fed about Kyle for the whole season, where her whole thing was, I'm reclaiming my autonomy. I am finding my own identity. I'm not getting bullied into submission anymore. Yeah, and was kind of meek.
And she just sat back in this little like shadow next to Kathy. Exactly, like holding her hand. So weird. So weird. And I just, who was responsible?
Love it. It's very Flowers in the Attic. Yeah.
So... as we come to a close with Beverly Hills, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I loved the most recent series of Love is Blind. I found that very enjoyable. And I'm currently watching Married at First Sight Australia.
Are you watching Big Brother?
No. I've never been into Big Brother.
Okay.
But I'm going to need something in the evenings. And so I'm kind of looking out for what's around. I know at some point I've got to catch up on some Salt Lake City so that we can talk about that most recent season because I missed it. And maybe now is the opportunity for me to catch up.
Ellie, I know you think that I don't post episodes anymore and that no one listens, but the amount of messages I've got where people are like, we need you.
What if we promise we will this? We will do that in the next few months, and I will make that one of the things I'll catch up on. Mm-hmm. And I also potentially wanted to know what you thought about doing another Traitors episode. I don't know if anyone enjoyed the Traitors things, but I feel like it's got bigger and maybe people would enjoy that. But having watched the UK one, and I'm just desperate to talk about the second season of the Australian one, which was the most maddening TV I've ever watched in my life. I've never shouted. I've never seen something more miscast to the point that I almost wanted to stop watching it, and then with a bigger payoff for how bad the whole season was. It was incredible.
It's like in real time an experiment of like, oh, I see how cults are formed. Like, I see how
I see how awful humans are.
Like, honestly, I see how like one not even charismatic leader but like can manipulate a group of idiots.
Honestly, yeah.
I've never seen gameplay like it.
And shocking. I've also just never seen a more infuriating person on my screen than that woman, Sarah. Imagine her being your therapist. That woman fucking squinting, looking like Lolly from Orange is the New Black, just being like...
Yes, she's very like, Lolly.
Oh my God. It's like, who is this? And you walk in and she's like, so tell me about your problems. What? So many, many exciting, well, probably not many exciting things to come. Many sporadic episodes to pop up when we can. Guys, what can we say? We're just hugely successful.
Yeah, I feel like, well, yeah, let's clarify this. We're international superstars and...
We're stars! We're international superstars!
I don't want to lead anyone on. And, you know, I just think we started this project during the pandemic. We had bags of time and... You know, we don't have the luxury of making money from this podcast. This is just a little passion project of our own. And it's a nice excuse for us to see each other and have a little gab. And I think this is maybe we should just readjust our expectations here. So it's just like whenever the moment strikes us, we'll be like surprising you with a little episode. Just,
you can check every now and then and be like, oh my God, it's a cheeky little treat from Ellie and James.
Yeah. There's a plethora of other great Housewives podcasts out there. Don't know any of them, but
no, don't do that. Don't sell other podcasts. Do that again, I'll fucking kill you. Don't fucking dare do that.
But we're the best,
of course. Right,
so yeah,
why don't you take us out since I did such a good job of taking us in?
Thank you very much for listening to the Housewives Archives.
That was such a glottal noise.
Make sure to I'm sorry. I just got off of doing the last month of doing eight shows a week, doing a one-man show. I'm sorry.
As
I'm
you
a
were.
A little bit husky.
As you were.
Thank you very much for listening to us on the Housewives Archives. If you like what you heard, please leave a review, send us a lovely message. Please tell your friends about the show. There's a massive back catalogue now of episodes, so if you're ever missing our dulcet tones, you can always go back and listen to the very beginning when our audio was even worse than what it is now.
Even worse. I always recommend going back and listening to the Game Night episode or the Carlton episode. So if you're feeling blue,
that was so much fun.
Listen to those
two. Episode game. Yeah, those are two really good ones. Yes, absolutely. Here.
If you can find it, the one where we were doing LVP on the ASMR Amsterdam. Das Venture. That still makes me laugh.
So if you select any episodes. But yes. Bye, everyone.
Oh, bye.